Rabotai, we're here on Daf Lamed Aleph, Amud Aleph. And we're talking about a case of a Kohen who placed his Eruv Tchumen in a cemetery. And the Erev Tchumen was made of Truma Tahora, and the Kohen himself is Tahar. Now, we had two questions. One question was, how could this Kohen get access to Truma that's sitting on top of a kever? Wouldn't it require that he contract Tuma? So we said that he can come in with a flying ohel, which is called Shida Tevo Migdal. And if we hold that ohel zoruk shmei ohel, then the ohel is chotzeitz bifnei atuma, and he has no problem getting to the truma. Now we have a second question. What about the truma itself? The truma itself is only edible if it's truma tahora. Truma Tmeya is an Isa Doraisa to eat. How could it serve as an Erev Tchumen? And the answer has to be that Lo Hukshar Lekabel Tuma. We have seven Machshirim, seven liquids, and a solid food would only be susceptible to Tuma if it came in contact with one of those seven liquids. So now we're assuming that the Truma did not come in contact with any of the seven liquids, hence it still remains tahor. Now the Gemara raises a third question called Hechi Maisile. So let's just see if we have the place. We're on Daf Lamed Aleph, Amud Aleph, four lines down from the top of the Amud. And the Gemara asks Hechi Maisile. Meaning, okay, we understand how he enters into the area. He's been carried by a Shida Teva Migdal. We understand why the Truma is Tahora, because it did not contract Tuma, it was low Hukshur. It was not wet, it was dry. But now we have a third question. In order for this Erev Tchumen to be valid, he has to have the ability to take the Erev Tchumen and get access to it. He's got to hold it in his hands so that he can eat it. Or at least potentially. I'm not saying he has to eat it, but at least the potential has to exist. Now, it's great that he's sitting in a carriage, but he has to open up the door of the carriage, stretch out his arm, and pick up the truma, which is sitting now on top of the kever. And in doing so, he is considered being mahil ala kever. And any part of the body that goes over the kever generates tumah for his entire body. You know, there's no such thing as tumah for part of the body. So he's considered being mahil ala kever. So the Gemara answers, b'pshutei kli eitz d'lo makabli tumah. He has like, I don't know how you describe it in English, if anyone could give me the words for it. Do you remember those sticks that these have where you clamp, you know, you tighten up and you can, you know, if you have something very high, you can get it down from the top. You have a cereal box that's sitting on a high thing. What would you say is the word for that? I don't know.
I call him a grabber.
A grabber. Excellent. Jeff, you came through. I haven't heard that word in 30 years. Grabber. Okay. Yeah, you're right. It's a grabber. So he's got a grabber that's made of wood. Now, this is very significant that it's made of wood, because we have a principle called Pshutei Kli Eitz, Eino Mekablim Tuma, which means that although with regard to other materials other than wood, the Torah says that, let's say metal, for example, is Mekabel Tuma, even if it's flat, even if it's a straight, you know, pole, a metal pole, but in the case of a wood pole, since it doesn't have a base kibul, which means it's not designated to use for as a receptacle, it's not makabel tuma. Now that's derived from the parsha of Tumas Kalim, where the Torah says in the list of Kalim, it says sak, right, with a sin, sak. And a sak is a classic case of a kli kibul. And the Torah there is referring to kli eitz. It's written in the parsha, and you need dumya de sak. That's in Parsha's Chukas. So now we have a case where he uses a kli eitz, and it's called pshute kli eitz because it doesn't have a kli kibul, and as a result, it's not makabel tuma, and he's going to have access to his truma, and it remains truma tahora through this pshute kli eitz. Had he used a kli that was not a kli eitz pashut, meaning it wasn't pshute kli eitz, then he would not be able to have access to this truma tahora. The kli itself is mahil ala kever, right? Because, right, let's say he had a large spoon, right? And the spoon is got a kli kibul to it. And he would scoop up the truma from the kever with this spoon, then immediately it would be mahil ala kever, and the kli would be makabel tuma. Now, here we have to know a little bit more about tuma vitara, because generally speaking, what we call a rishon l'tuma does not generate tuma, neither to Adam, to Kalim, and not even to Ochlin u'mashkin. So what we need here is what's called an av ha-tuma. And now, a kli, which is mahil ala mes, actually is upgraded to the status of an av ha-tuma. So that once this kli, again, if it wasn't pshute kli eitz, would be mahil ala kever, in order to scoop up the truma that's sitting on the kever, that kli would now receive the tuma of an av ha-tuma. That's called kli shemail ala mes. And this is all Mishnayos and Olos. And therefore, it's going to be Metame the Truma. Once it's Metame the Truma, then automatically the Kohen has no possibility of eating the Truma. Eating Truma Tmeya is a very severe Isur. And once again, the Erev Tchumen would be invalid. Not only that, it's interesting, because if the Kohen stretches his arm out with this spoon, right, that has a kli kibul, or with a metal pole, which is poshut, but it doesn't matter, it's made of metal, then once the kli becomes an avatum because it's mahil, then the Kohen who's holding on to that kli also contracts tumas ohel. He also becomes Tomei, and he's not allowed to eat Truma because he's Tomei, which would mean that even if the Truma would not be Tmeya, but the Kohen is Tomei, there are two Isurim. There's one Isur for a Kohen Tahar to eat Truma Tmeya. There's another Isur for a Kohen Tomei to eat Truma Tmeya. So if the Kohen is Tomei, even if the Truma is Tahora, there's an Isur. So in any event, we need Pshutei Kli Eitz. Okay, now the Gemara asks another question. Okay, now here at this point, we're getting a little bit heavy into Olos. I'm going to just tell you what I know, and if you can add anything, please do. The Gemara now asks Akasha, Vehoka Mahil, which means the following. The Kohen is holding on to Pshute Kli Eitz in order to get access to the Truma. The Kli itself does not contract Tuma. Why? Because Pshute Kli Eitz do not contract Tuma. But nevertheless, there's a Koma Ahil situation. which means that if the kli itself has what's called a rochav tefach, then the person holding on to the kli becomes tame. Again, we don't have to get into the details here about rochav tefach. Whatever that is, it is. But the point is that the Gemara is saying that since this kli is in the hands of the Kohen, and the Kohen is using it to pick up truma that's on top of a kever, he, together with the kli, are considered like one entity. In other words, the pole, we'll call it, right? Or the grabber, as you call it, is an extension of his body. And therefore, he's considered to be mahil ala kever. The kli itself remains tar, because of pshute kliates, but he himself is being mahil ala kever, ala mes. Why? Because this is like his arm, so to speak, his extended arm. And once again, we have a situation where the Kohen contracts tumah. And how could he do such a thing? Because the Torah enjoins a Kohen from becoming tumah. So in the process of taking the truma, which again we said is tahor because it's not mukshar, with a kli eitz, which itself remains tar because it's pshutei kli eitz. Nevertheless, he's not allowed to do this because he becomes tomei. He's considered a mahil ala kever ala mes. So the Gemara answers that this principle, that the kli is considered an extension of his arm, and therefore, despite the fact that the kli is not makabel tumah, he himself is considered mahil ala mes, that doesn't apply in all kelim. That only applies in a kli that has a rochav tefach. So, for example, let's add this gigantic spoon. Let's say, you know, farmers use these big shovels, you know, so he has a shovel, and it has a rochav tefach. But let's say he uses a reed as a grabber, and the reed itself, although it has a certain diameter to it, but it's less than a tefach. So that's the Gemara's answer here. Demaisi le achodei. Alright, so how does he bring the truma to him? He has a kli that has a chodei to it. It means it has a sharp end, right? A very narrow end, which does not have a hekev tefach. And if it doesn't have a shear of a tefach, then the person who's holding on to this kli, it's almost like piercing the truma, he is not called mahil alames. Now all this is to explain the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. Right? Rabbi Yehuda was the one who authored this statement in the Braisa of Ma'arvim L'Kohen Torah B'Truma Tahora B'Kever. The Chachamim rejected it. They hold that this Erev is disqualified. So the Gemara asks the following question. Ihachi, if this is the situation here, that you have the potential of the Kohen using this kind of a kli eitz, which is pshute kli eitz, which doesn't have a rochav tefach, to have access to his truma, the truma itself remains tahora because it doesn't have a heksher of one of the Zion makshirim. The Kohen himself remains tahor because he's inside a shida and his arm is not extended over the kever, but rather he's holding on to this pointed, you know, this pointed kli eitz, which is less than rochav tefach, is my time of the Rabbanan. Why the Rabbanan disqualify this Eruv in the case of Truma Tahora on a kever? Because there's a possibility that he can have access to the Truma Tahora without violating any Isur Tumah. Now, let's just review something that we learned on the previous Amud, and that is in a case where the Truma was inside a cemetery. That's not our case. Our case in the Brisa here, on the top of Daf Lamed Aleph, is a case where there's a kever, and there's no cemetery, or for that matter we could say it's a kever on the boundary of the outer boundary of the cemetery, and it's one single kever, and Rabbi Yehuda says you can have an Erev of Truma for a Kohen on that kever. And the Gemara doesn't understand why the Rabbanim disqualify that Erev. In the previous case, on Daf Lamed, we had a case where the Erev of the Truma was inside the Beis HaKvaros. And the Rabbanim disqualify that Erev. That's not a problem. The Gemara never raised that question. Why? Because you may recall that there was a machlokes about Oel Zaruch. So you have the carriage that's moving, and Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that Oel Zarek Shmei Ohel, and therefore the Kohen could go into a Beis HaKvaros through a moving carriage. And that carriage has the status of an Oel, and it's Chotzitz Bifnei Atuma. The Rabbanan disqualify such an Erev in a Beis HaKvaros because they're of the opinion that Oel Zarek Lav Shmei Ohel, that an Oel has to be stationary, cannot be moving. And in the case of a moving carriage, it doesn't have the status of an Oel, and therefore it's not Chotzitz Bifnei Atuma. And the Kohen certainly is not allowed to enter into the Beis HaKvaros, no way, no how, even through a Shida Tevo Migdal. But in the case of a single Kever, which is not a Beis HaKvaros, he doesn't enter into a Makom Tuma. The only problem is, how does he get access to the Truma that's sitting on top of this Kever? And we've answered all our problems. We solved the problem of the Truma. The Truma remains Tahora. We've solved the problem of the Kli that he's using because the Kli eats Pashut. We even solved the problem of the person, in this case the Kohen, who's holding on to that Kli because it's Bechudei and it doesn't have a Poseach Tefach, a Rochav Tefach. So he's not considered Mahil al Kever. So what do the Rabbanan hold in this case? So the Gemara now throws a curveball, a whole nother variable into the equation. The problem here is not Tuma Vitara. The problem is enjoying the benefit of a Kever. Hanah min HaKever. Any Tashmishe mess or kever is awesome. Like, I'll give you an example. Again, before we get to kever, we have a sugya in Masechet Nedarim about tachrichim. And you designated this beged for tachrichim a mess. And the Gemara says, am I allowed to change my mind and now decide that I want to wear it? And the Gemara says it depends on whether Hazmana Milsa or not. Just again, you know, we don't have to go into Hazmana Milsa here, but I'm just saying, if Hazmana Milsa, it means that Tachrichim are considered Tachrichim even before you put the shrouds on the body of the Niftar, the person who passed away. And that automatically generates an Isar Hanah. So you're not allowed to benefit from a mess. If you're familiar with the even partially, superficially familiar with the issue of cadaver transplants. You know, am I allowed to take the cornea of a dead body and transplant it to someone who needs a cornea, a living person? So one of the major issues there is hanah min ha-mess. So the question is, what's the status of a cornea? You know, is it part of the body of the mess or it's separate? And that's the issue. But let's say, for example, if you were to take a kidney from a corpse, then you have a serious issue of hanah min ha-mess. Again, if it's a pikuach nefesh situation, that's different. But let's say it's not pikuach nefesh. Person has one kidney and he can survive or whatever. So anyway, this is called hanah min ha-mess. And now we're going to upgrade it and add another element called Hana Min HaKever. The Kever itself has the status of a mess. I was once, maybe even more than once, at funerals where I saw people actually sitting down on Kvarim. Now, I didn't really blame them because, you know, it was a large group of people, you know, and the rabbi or whoever, the member of the family, was giving a hesped, and it was pushing hot outside, and people were getting, you know, they were falling like flies, and some of them fell on top of Kvarim. So I wasn't the type of kanoi, you know, to yell and scream, but it's a serious issue. You're not allowed to have hana from a kever. So it's called tashmish hames or tashmish hakever. And kosavri, the chachomim hold, osur liknos bias beisure hana. In other words, the status of the kever is considered a bias that's osur v'hano. And when he puts the Erev on top of the kever, he wants to now be konesh shvisa. That's for the purpose of an Erev Tchumen, to be konesh shvisa in that place. And in order to be konesh shvisa, to allow him to go chutz l'tchumen, another 2,000 amah beyond that kever, he actually is acquiring, again, it's a different kind of kinyan, it's not a kinyan mamon, but he's, so to speak, acquiring the kever as his own bias, right? The whole point of the Erev Tchumen is to set up a base dira in that particular place. So let's say I know I have to walk 4,000 amah to the north. Let's say, you know, I'm a witness for a... for the Kiddush Levana, let's say, so I have to walk, I know I'm going to have to walk in order to see the new moon. So what I do is, I go 2,000 amah out of the city, before Shabbos, and I'm Kone Bais, this becomes my base Dira, which is going to allow me to go another 2,000 amah. That's the purpose of the Erev Tchumen. Now he's setting up his Erev Tchumen in the place where his Shtei Sudos are. So that Makom for Shtei Sudos is called his base Dira. He's Kone Shvisa. And now he sets up his Shtei Sudos on top of a Kever, as odd as that sounds. I don't know why he couldn't find a better place for it, but... And there are but in a hole that such an Erev is possible. Again, at this point, I would tell you to drop the coin. We have... It's not an issue because the owner of the Erev is a Kohen. That's irrelevant. The Rabbanan are disqualifying this Erev for anyone because he cannot be Kone Shvisa on a Kever. So the Gemara asks, okay. Oh, so the Rashi asks the question here, why did the Brice of Rabbi Yehuda on the top of the Omud have to mention a Kohen? Forget about a Kohen. Has nothing to do with Truma, has nothing to do with a Kohen, has nothing to do with Tumah Vitara. It just has to do with whether you could be Kone Shvis on a Kever. So Rashi says, Lo dia kocho shel Rabbi Yehuda, shematir af b'kohen. Meaning that there are tzvei dinim here, you know, and Rabbi Yehuda, by validating this Erev, is telling us two different dinim. Number one, he's telling us the din of achudei, right, achudei, which means that if the kli that the Kohen is using to get access to the mazon shtei sudas on top of the kever is achudei, it's less than a rochav tefach, then he's not called Mahil Alames. And number two, he's telling me a Chiddush that he could be Kone Shvisa on top of a Kever. And it's the second point that the Rabbanan disagree with. They would not disqualify this Eruv because it's truer for a Kohen, because it is possible for the Kohen to get access to this Truma and eat the truma that's on top of the kever, and the Rabbanan don't deny it. That's called achudei. But the Rabbanan disqualify the Erev because of a different reason. You cannot be Kone Shvisa on a kever. perfecting Gemara. I don't get it. Michlal to Rabbi Yehuda, Savar Mutter. Does Rabbi Yehuda hold that you could be Kone Shvisa on a place that's Osir Bano? That's impossible. So the Gemara has a new explanation for Rabbi Yehuda. Now this explanation entails two hanachot, two premises, each of which has to be analyzed. Premise number one is that an Erev Tchumen is only meaningful for a Dvar Mitzvah. So the man has to go Chutz L'Tchum because he knows he's going to be a witness for the new moon. And we'll find some other cases where, you know, he's going out for Bikur Cholim and the hospital is Chutz L'Tchum, so he's allowed to set up an Erev Tchum. And if he's not going for a Dvar Mitzvah, then there ain't no such enterprise as an Erev Tchum. That's premise number one. Premise number two is that when you benefit from the Erev Tchumen, that's not considered Hanah. Why? Because your purpose for the Erev Tchumen is a Dvar Mitzvah. And whenever you get benefit from a Dvar Mitzvah, that's not considered a benefit at all. So for example, if I'm Mudr Hanah from a shofar, I could blow that shofar, and that's not a violation of Isra Hanah, because the Hanah is the hearing of the kol shofar, which itself is a mitzvah. Now, there's a gewaldige chiddush here in Rabbi Yehuda. In the case of shofar, the kol shofar that enters into his ears is a mitzvah. In the case of tchumen, the mitzvah is not the erev itself. The Erev facilitates the mitzvah. The mitzvah is going to be when he goes chutz l'tchum, you know, he goes 4,000 amos, 6,000 amos away from his makkah, his house, on Shabbos, and he sees the new moon. But that also comes under the halacha that the Erev itself, and the hanah that he gets from the Erev, is called hanas mitzvah. It has a chal shem cheftz of hanas mitzvah. So the Gemara says, "Kasavar mitzvos lav lehenos nitnu." The Torah does not classify hanah from a mitzvah if the purpose and the goal of the hanah is for a mitzvah. That's not considered hanah. So that even though you're not allowed to have benefit from a kever is osur hanah. What benefit am I getting from the kever? It's facilitating my erev tchumen, and that itself is called Hanas mitzvah. And Hanas mitzvah is excluded or mufka from Hanah. It's not considered Hanah. So something that's osur b'Hanah, I could benefit from it if my benefit is called Hanas mitzvah. And my benefit from the Erev Tchumen is the mitzvah. And therefore it's not a violation of the Isur Hanah. Fascinating. Now, let me just point out that this line of the Gemara assumes that an Erev Tchumen is done exclusively in a case of a Dvar Mitzvah. And this is a Gemara on Daf Pei Beis, way, way ahead of where we are now, almost at the end of the Masechta. And the Gemara gives examples of Holech Lebeis Avel or Holech Lebeis HaMishte. He's going to be Mesameach the Chosen Kal. Always amazed me that these two phrases go together like horse and buggy all over Shas. It's always Avel and Mishte. Same 7 days that you have for Avelus, you have for a Beis HaMishte. I think my Rebbe once had a drush on this, about the vulnerability of man. Anyway, So therefore, you could make your Erev on a Kever, says Rabbi Yehuda. Why? Because even though the Kever is Osir Bano, but Mitzvos Lav Lehenos Nitna. And a Kira Mitzvah is not called a Hano, as far as violating Isra Hano is concerned. And here, since he's setting up the Erev Tchumen for the Mitzvah of Halich Lebeis Ovel Lebeis HaMishteh, therefore, we apply the principle of Mitzvah Slav Lehenos Nitnu, and hence there's not a violation of Isuri HaNoam and Akev. Now, keep in mind that there are situations where even if he's involved in a Mitzvah, nevertheless, he will violate an Isur HaNoam. So this principle called Mitzvah Slav Lehenos Nitnu has limitations. Let's say, for example, he would benefit before he actually fulfills the mitzvah, or he would gain benefit after he fulfills the mitzvah. Or let's say the hana that he benefits is not the mitzvah itself, then we would not apply Mitzvah Slav Lehenos Nitnu. So, for example, we have a whole sugya about hanas tashmishech olai. Is he allowed to have tashmish for the sake of the mitzvah of ona, when he's going to have Hana and she's Mudar Hana? And the Gemara says, well, let's apply the principle of Mitzvah Slav Lehenos Nitnu. Or, for example, he says Sukkah Olai and he generates an Isur Hana Minas Sukkah. Now, Sukkah is Teshru Ke'en Taduru. So he eats in his Sukkah, he sleeps in his Sukkah. Do we apply the principle of Mitzvah Slav Lehenos Nitnu? So the Gemara says that in the case of Sukkah, the Hana that he gets from the Sukkah is Gufa Shel Mitzvah. It's part of the Mitzvah itself. In the case of Hana's Tashmish, the Gemara clears back and forth whether the Hana itself is part of the Mitzvah of Ona. And if it's not, then it's extraneous. And we cannot be Matir this Tashmish if there's Hana's Tashmish Echolai based on Mitzvah Slav Lehenos, because the Hano that he gets from the Tashmish is not Gufa Shel Mitzvah. I think the final Maskon, if I remember, I'm not learning the Dharam now, is that Hano's Tashmish is part of the Gufa Shel Mitzvah. But I just wanted to give you a flavor of how Mitzvah Slav Lehenos Nitnu works. Okay. So the Gemara now asks the following question from Rava, who makes a statement in Masechet Rosh Hashanah. And we're talking about shofar in the case of a korban ola. Right, so we have a man says about this ram, he says, harezu ola. And obviously the animal is now osur bano. Now he cuts off the horn of the ram and he blows it as a shofar on Rosh Hashanah. So Rava says in Masechta Rosh Hashanah regarding Tokei B'Shofar Shal Ola Yatza, he's fulfilled his mitzvah. Fine. Why does he say so? Because Mitzvah Slav Lehenos, his mitzvah is hearing the shofar. Hearing the shofar, on the one hand, is a hanah from Ola, from the carbon Ola, but on the other hand, it's a hanah's mitzvah. And we're going to apply the principle of Mitzvah Slav Lehenos Nit. Is Lema Ketanoi Omer Lishmaite? We came to the conclusion that an Erev Tchumen from a Kever is a machlokus between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbanan, whereas Rabbi Yehuda validates the Erev based on the principle of Mitzvah Slav Lehenos, the Rabbanan invalidate the Erev because they don't accept the principle of Mitzvah Slav Lehenos. So did Rava formulate his halacha standing on the shoulders of Rabbi Yehuda against the Chachamim and Lema therefore Ketanoi Omer L'Shmaite? Amalach Rava. Rava says the following. Isvirilahu. If the Chachamim would hold Ein Ma'arvin El Dvar Mitzvah, which again is one day in Pei Vav, on Pei Beis, then they would agree to Rabbi Yehuda's position, the Erev would be valid, because the Erev by definition is called a Dvar Mitzvah, Mitzvah Slav Lehenos, even though it's on a Kevah. Kuli Alma, everybody agrees Mitzvah Slav Lehenos. So don't misunderstand, says Rav, and think that the Rabbanan disagree with Rava, with Rabbi Yehuda, about the validity of the Erev based on Mitzvah Lehenos Nitnu. They also agree Mitzvah Slav Lehenos Nitnu. They accept that principle. But Hocha, Behocha Miflegi, Mar Sova, Rabbi Yehuda holds Ein Me'arvin Eludvar Mitzvah. And therefore Mitzvah Slav Lehenos Nitnu kicks in. So he could be Me'arvin Akever. But Mar Sova, the Chachamim disagree. They hold Me'arvin Afiludvar Mishus. And therefore, if he puts his Erev on top of the Kever, he's being nene by using the kever, and a kever is asur banah, and he's not interested in a dvar mitzvah. And all the Rishonim point out over here that it would be mutar li'arev l'dvar rishus, and then according to Chachom, it'd be asur to be ma'arev bekever. But what happens if he's being ma'arev l'dvar mitzvah? What would be the status? So the Rishonim want to suggest that the Chachamim would say that we're going to invalidate an Erev Tchumin, even if it's Lidvar Mitzvah, Levaker HaSachole, or Lesameach HaSachos V'Kala, because we're afraid, right, in the case of Kever, we're afraid that tomorrow or next week he'll set up the same Eruv and he's not interested in the Dvar Mitzvah. Again, that could only make sense according to the Chachamim, not according to Rabbi Yehuda, because Rabbi Yehuda doesn't recognize a matir of Eruv Tchumen if it's Shalol Dvar Mitzvah. It's exclusively for a Dvar Mitzvah. Now the Gemara asks another kasha from another statement, in this case of Rabbi Yosef. Ela Hadi Amar Rabbi Yosef. So again, if you have machlokas tanoim about whether there's an Erev Tchumen for a Dvar Rishus, that's okay. But once you get to the level of Amoraim, in this case Rav Yosef makes a statement, Eim Arvin El Dvar Mitzvah, is Lema Ketanoi Omer L'Shmaite? Again, you know, you might say, well, Rav Yosef is paskening like Rabbi Yehuda, against the Chachamim. The Gemara is not satisfied with that, because in the machlok shim Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbim, Yochid v'Rabbim Alochid k'Rabbim. So why would Rabbi Yosef paskin? Apparently, Rabbi Yosef must have assumed that everybody agrees it's a given that Erev Tchumen is exclusively applicable in the case of a Dvar Mitzvah. Everybody would agree that. Or Rabbi Yosef to Kuli Alma. Ein ma'arvin el dvar mitzvah. Uda kuli alma mitzvah slav lehenos nitnu. So the Rabbanan would agree that although there's no Erev Tchumen without a dvar mitzvah, and there's no such thing as a violation of an Isra Anon in a dvar mitzvah case, so we've accepted these principles universally, even the Chacham agree. So b'haka miflegi. What is the machlok shin Chacham and Rabbi Yehuda? Mar Sovar, Rabbi Yehuda holds Kevon de Konale Eruv Lo Nichale Lemintere. That once he's Kona the Eruv, a what's called a Makum Shvisa, then he is not going to be Shomer, he's not going to watch his Eruv, he's not going to be Nene from the fact that the Eruv is Mishtamersham. And therefore, he's allowed to leave the Erev on a kever. Umar Sover, the Chachamim hold, Nichale de Minkere. That it's very comfortable for him to watch his Erev in that place during the course of Shabbos. Why? The Itzrich Achille. Because if he needs food, he's going to eat it. So if he sets up his Erev on a kever, then that's considered mishtamish b'tashmishe ames, mishtamish b'kever shal mes, which is also banah. And at this point, it's shalol litzorch mitzvah, meaning the mitzvah is only to set up the Erev, but to protect the food so that he could eat it, that's called a dvar rishus. That's not part of the purview or the scope of the Erev. And therefore, in that case, he is going to violate the Iser Hanah because Nichale de Minter. So I just want to read to you one note over here. And he says the following. He says, La'achar she'eruvo kanalo eruv v'kanalo shvisa. According to Rabbi Yehuda, shuvlo ichbaslo lishmar sham eruvo. He's not intending to eat the eruv. He just wants to accomplish, you know, the kinyan shvisas to be kona shvisa. And that was the dvar mitzvah, so that's not called hanah asura. And the fact that the eruv is now going to stay there, and maybe he'll be able to eat it later on, which is again shalol tzarch mitzvah. That's not on his radar screen. He's not interested in that. Now Rashi raises a question because the eruv has to be set up before Shabbos, and it's only chal b'knisas haShabbos. And Rashi wants to know what's the status of that lapse of time between the moment that he puts down his eruv and Shabbos. He needs the eruv to be mishtamer. The eruv has to remain at least 1 second into Shabbos. And that should be considered a dvar reshus. So how could Rabbi Yehuda allow such an eruv? So Rashi says that's also called a dvar mitzvah, because since the eruv will not be valid unless the food is mishtamer until that 1 minute into Shabbos, then the eruv will be pasul. He's got to have the eruv at least at the beginning of Shabbos. So that lapse of time is also included in the dvar mitzvah. That's what Rashi points out. And then the Chachamim hold that once he's kona shvisa, at that point, he still wants the food. Again, you know, usually we say that if you did a dvar mitzvah with something, you want to do a second mitzvah. So he wants to eat it during the course of Shabbos. But that's called the dvar reshus, the itzrich achile. And therefore he's going to be nene from the kever. So here's the note I wanted to share with you. He writes, L'maskonas ha-sugya, taimam shel chachomim hu mipnei iser hanah, sheli achar chalos ha-eruv. So get hanah subsequent to the chalos ha-eruv. Is l'chora, tam ze eno maspik el li iser leser l'chatchilo, l'aniach ha-eruv bekever. In the violation of the Isar Hanah from the Kever comes subsequent to the Chalos HaEruv, when it's Mishtamer. The Eruv should be valid, because at the moment of the Chalos HaEruv, it was a Dvar Mitzvah, he wasn't getting any personal benefits from the Kever. He says, Masha Achakach, Ovar al Isar Bazesh Nenesh, who Mishamer Es HaEruv B'mokom Kvura, Ein Bazesh Siba Levate Os Chalos HaEruv. So it would seem now that the whole deal here of the Chachamim arguing against Rabbi Yehuda is whether or not l'chatchila we're going to allow him to set up such an Eruv. Since we're afraid that he's going to benefit from the Eruv subsequent to the Chalos HaEruv, because it's going to be mishtamer for him to eat that food, he's being nene from the Kever, so we have to be afraid of such a thing. But that's not going to undermine the Chalos HaEruv. V'tama. And now he asks the following question. The Pasak HaRambam, Perek Vav Milchus Erev, V'chein B'Shulchan Aruch, or Chaim Siman Tov Tes, Shegam B'di Eved, Ein Eruvo Eruv, that the Rabbanon and the Chachamim of Rabbi Yehuda went as far as to invalidate the Eruv. Says the Karen Ora, Kevan She'ovar Al Ha'isur, Shelo Lehenos Mibeis HaKvaros, Kansu Shelo Yochel Eruvo. That we have to implement here a knas, that since he was shomer on his eruv after the chalos eruv, and that's already a dvar reshus, he now has violated the isra hanah from the kever, and the rabbanan now will penalize him and invalidate the eruv. Now, Rabbosai, we're up to the Mishnah on the bottom of Daf Lamed Aleph, and here I would like to give some introductions to Zeroyim. And as I've told you at the outset, this is Talmud Bavli. And we learned quite a bit of Taros and Olos, Kalim. Now we have to learn Zeroyim. Okay. So let me just read you the font. Peiros shegadlu be'eretz Yisrael. Okay, so you have fruits that grew in the Holy Land. So number one, he's chayev to be mafrish truma gedola, and chita achas poter sakri, on a deraisa level, there's no minimum shear of truma. The rabbana require either 1/40th, 1/50th, or 1/60th. 1/40th is ayin yofeh, 1/50th is ayin beninis, and 1/60th is ayin ra. Again, all these introductions will become more relevant as we go through the sugyas. Number two, after he takes off truma, let's say he takes off 2% of his harvested field, right? So that's 1/50. That's ayin beninis. So he's now down to 98%. Is he's got to be mafrish maser rishon for the levi. That's every year of the 6 years of the Shemitah cycle. So then he's going to take off 10% of what was left after Truma Gedola. And now we get to the levi. The levi has now received from the Israel maser rishon. He's now chayev to be mafrish truma from his maser. That's called truma's maser, and he has to give truma to the kohen. Okay, now what happens with getting back to the balabayas? After he was mafrish truma gedola, he was mafrish maser rishon. Now he has to be mafrish an additional maser from what's ever left remaining after truma maser, and that's called either maser sheni or maser oni. So on the first, second, fourth, and fifth years of the Shemitah cycle, he's mafrish maser sheni. On the third and sixth years in the Shemitah cycle, he's mafrish maser oni. Now, what's the status of the fruits and the grains before he was mafrish truma and maser? That's called tevel. And tevel is osur bachila but mutar b'ano. And what happens to the tvua that of maser rishon that was given to the levi, and he has not yet been mafrish trumas maser? That's also tevel. And truma gedola and Trumas Maser is only mutar b'achila to the Kohen, and a Zar who eats that Truma is Chayav Misa B'dei Shamayim. Maser Rishon, on the other hand, is given to the Levi, and it has the status of Chulin, and anyone is allowed to eat it. But again, that's only after being Mafrish Trumas Maser. So let's say the Levi has received Maser, and he took off Truma's Maser, gave it to the Kohen. The remainder is Mutal Lazarev, because Maser doesn't have any Kedusha to it. Now, as we said, 1, 2, 4, and 5 is Maser Sheni. Maser Sheni has Kedusha, it has to be taken to Yerushalayim, and it can only be eaten in Yerushalayim. Alternatively, he could be Poder Peros Maser Sheni by giving the equivalent to the market value of the Peros in currency. He takes the currency to Yerushalayim, and there he buys food, and he eats it by Kedushas Maser Sheni. In addition to pigeon, he has to add another chomesh, so that if the peros of Maser Sheni are worth 100, it's not enough to be poded them onto 100, he has to be poded them onto 120. If we buy peros from an Amah Oretz, we don't know whether he was mafrish or not, so the Rabbanan said that we can rely on the Amah Oretz as far as truma is concerned. That's a very small percentage, but we're afraid that maybe he wasn't mafrish maser. Therefore, the Chachamim created something called Dmai. Dmai means what is it? Meaning we don't know really what it is. On a Doraisa level, Dmai is Mutter because Rov HaMeoritz Maaser, named the Torah relies on Rov, that even an Amoritz will be Mafish. Maaser. And the Chachamim, this is very ambiguous, sort of complicated, because to some extent they relied on Rov, just like the Torah itself does, but nevertheless they require Afrosh. And that's called Achiv Hafroshes Dmai. So the Mishnah says Ma'arvin Bidmai. Now, we know that an Eruv has to be made up of something that you're allowed to eat. You're not allowed to eat Dmai until you Mafrish Maser. Until you Mafrish Maser. So now you have a loaf of bread that you bought from an Amoritz. Its status is that of Dmai. He's choshed that maybe he wasn't Mafrish Maser. You're not allowed to eat it for that reason. And yet, it's kosher for an Eruv. And the Gemara is going to ask the following question. Dmai holo chazile. He's not allowed to eat the Dmai. How could it be possible that without Afroshes Maser, he could set up this Dmai as an Eruv, and that Eruv would be valid? And here's where the Gemara is going to introduce those kulos in Dmai, that it's not that the Chachamim are the Chachamim ignore the Dorais, the Torah law of Rov. They accept the Torah law of Rov, but they want to be machmir to require afrosha, but it's not tevel. And I'll prove it to you, says the Gemara. So let's leave the Mishnah for a moment, we'll come back. And the Gemara says, Migu di boy mafkele nechose, vahavi oni vechozile, hashnami chozile. Tisnan machilinus anim dmai. It's really fascinating. The Rabbanon, when they established the Issa Dmai, that you're not allowed to eat Dmai until you mafresh Masa, they only did so with regard to Ashirim. But for Aniyim, we're not going to require them to give up Masa. They can eat the Dmai. Now, we're talking about an Ashir who's not an Ani. You know, he's got Masayim Zuz in his bank account. And he made an Erev out of Dmai. And the Mishnah validates the Eruv. So the Gemara says he could have been mafkir his nechasim, and if he would have done so, then he would be an ani. He did not make his possessions ownerless. He's not an ani. But theoretically he could have done so. So I have a sefer here in my library on Zroim. It's called Bikurei Abba. Are you familiar with this? This is written by my first Rebbe in high school. I was a kid, Rabbi Abba Branspiegel. Shlita. I mean, he needs a refuah shleima. But so Rabbi Branspiegel writes in this sefer that what the Gemara has in mind is not a theoretical possibility that he might be mafkir his nechasin. And he proves this from a Gemara in Brachos. The Gemara in Brachos says that you could be mezamein on Dmai. Now we don't have zimun on macholas asuros. The Gemara says, alo chazile. He's not allowed to eat the Dmai. How could you have a meal of Dmai? You know, three people sitting around baking bread, and the bread is Dmai, and they weren't mafrish, and they're going to be mezamein? So the Gemara answers the exact same answer that you see here, that came unto migudi boy mafkele nechosiv avile oni is hashnanami chazile. So Rav Branspiegel said, maybe in Erevin you could possibly say, well, theoretically, You know, the Kohen could go flying into the Beis HaKvaris in a Shita Tevu Migdal, holding on to a grabber that's a Pshute Kliets, and it's less than a Rochav Tefa. That's all fine and dandy for Erevin, but for Zimun, Zimun is now, he's not being Mafkir. So Branspiegel was Machadesh, and I actually heard it from him, but I was 14 years old. But I don't remember it from that age, that you, I can promise you. But I saw it here in this sefer of his, Bikurei Abba, that when the Rabbanan Asid Mai, they gave it the status of a of an Iser Gavra rather than an Iser Heftza. Normally, without Afroshes Maaser, it's a Heftza Shel Tevel. Tevel is a Heftza Di Isura. It will be excluded from brachos and likewise from Erev Tchumen. But if we're talking about Dmai as opposed to Tevel, Dmai, even though the Rabbanan were choshesh that maybe the Amoritz who sold to you was not Mafresh Maaser, it's not Tevel. It's not a Heftza Di Isura. The Rabbanan said, we're going to generate an Iser until you do a Maisa Afrosh. We're not going to allow you to eat the Dmai. That's an Iser Gav. And the Gemara demonstrates that from the fact that it's Mutul Aniyin. If it would have been a Heftza of Dmai, of Tevel and a Heftza Di Isura, how could you be Matir for the sake of an Ani eating Tevel? It's very nice, we want to do whatever we can on behalf of the Aniyim, but we're not going to be Matir Isurim for the Aniyim. The answer is that for an Ani, it's not Osir. It's only Osir, and the Rabbanan enacted that this Dmai is only Osir for an Ashirim. If that be the case, there's nothing inherent in the Heftza. It's not a Heftza Disur. And there are two Nafkaminas. One Nafkamina is Brachos, and the other Nafkamina is Erev Tchum. And the reason I'm excited about this is because it supports what I wanted to once say about Yom HaKippur, that the reason why an Erev would be valid for Tchumen in Yom Kippur is because Yom Kippur is an Issa Gavra. You remember such a thing? Anyway, that's what I tried to assume. Now let me just mention that according to Rashi, when it says in our Mishnah, Ma'arvim B'dmai, that refers to both Erev Tchumen and Erev Chatzeres. Tosus and many other Rishonim say that our chapter is dedicated to Erev Tchumen and only to Erev Tchumen. And Ledina, it could be the Rishonim admit that an Erev Chatzeres could also be validated by a Dmai. But we definitely need for an Erev Chatzeres something that's Mutar Bachila. And the question is, do we classify Dmai as Mutar Bachila? And as we said earlier, in the case of Maaser Sheni, we need Pidyon. The Torah says in Parshas Re'eh that you could be Poda Maaser Sheni. Hegdesh, if it has Kedushas Domim, is Osir Bano L'chol Odom. And if you violate the Isra No, you're Chayv of Me'ila. But you could be Poda Hegdesh with Mos. The Hegdesh is Yotzi L'chulin. And if he's Poda something which he himself was Magdish, he has to add a Chomish. All this is in Vayikra Chav Zayin. The Torah commands us in the midst of Challah to be Mafrish part of the Issa and give it to the Kohen. Challah is Mutar Bachila only to Kohenim. It's also to Zorim. And we'll see later on that from the language of the Mishnah, it would seem that Kohenim could be Ma'ariv B'Challah, but not Yisrael. That would reflect a sheet of Sumchus, that the Erev has to be something that's Roy L'Achila for that person who's Ma'ariv himself. According to Chachomim, it's sufficient that it's Roy L'Achirim, so therefore even a Yisrael could be Yotze with an Erev of Challah, because it's Mutar B'Achila for Kohenim. The Rosh writes that our Mishnah reflects the Sheet of the Chacham as well, and when it says Kohenim, it's Lav Dafka Kohenim, but generally speaking, the one who would leave Chal as an Erev is a Kohen, so that's why the Mishnah mentions Kohenim. Now, according to Chachomim, that you're allowed to be ma'ariv with something that's roy lachirim, even if it's not roy to the ma'ariv himself, t'mai is roy la'aniyim. But the Gemara thinks that since our Mishnah says bistam, then it reflects not only the shita of the Chacham, but also the shita of Sumchus. So the Gemara asks, Dmai is not roy lachila to the Ma'ariv himself, so why would Sumchus validate such an Erev, assuming the Mishnah could reflect even the shita of Sumchus? And the Gemara thinks that Dmai is osu b'achil chal odom even la'aniyim perhaps. That's why it asks the question even according to Chachamim. And what we want to know is, what is the Gemara's answer of Migu? Is that an answer that works even for Sumchus? That's what we wanted to suggest. Now, I'm skimming through the Sefer Bikuri Abba of Rav Braunschweig. I'm not finding right now the piece about Mai, so it could be that I heard it from him myself when we learned Pesachim back in the day. But it might be here. I just don't see it here at first glance. Let's just make a note of where we got up to. We're here on the bottom of Lamed Aleph, Amud Aleph. And we're basically ready for Lamed Aleph Amud Beis, just that we have to fill in the Mishnah. Thank you.